Thanks for joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and ultimately successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to the delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you as you share the good news. Yes, I'm in. Not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, I'd like to give you a quick reminder. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accept.com/80. Can you believe this is the 80th episode? And you can leave a comment with your question. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. We're developing a wonderfully supportive and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to comment. In the last few shows, I've had questions. This one I don't, but I hope that I will again in the future. Now, to our guest. I'm absolutely thrilled that our guest has taken the time from a very busy schedule to chat with me this evening. Let me give you a little background, and you'll see why I'm so excited. Augusto, or Gus, Jachman graduated from West Point in 2004 with a BS in Arabic, Sociology, and Systems Engineering. Now, that's quite a combo. He served as an officer in the U.S. Army for 5 years and was deployed in combat in Iraq and also served in Tbilisi, Georgia. He then attended the NYU Stern School of Business, where in addition to earning his MBA and serving as the president of the Management Consulting Association, he also won several awards. Upon graduating in 2011, he joined Booz & Company, which recently became Strategy And. He is today an engagement manager and senior associate at Strategy And. Now, that's all very impressive, and there's tons of things I'd like to talk to and ask Gus about. But we are going to discuss consulting and Gus's MBA experience. But the real reason I invited him to join me is because in 2011, around the time he graduated from Stern, he co-founded Service to School. And I'm going to let Gus tell us about that, about Service to School and what that actually is. Gus, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks for having me, Linda. I'm really excited to be here and chatting with you, and I think more importantly, hopefully giving some good advice and some good counsel to your audience to help them get into the very best school that they can.
That's great. Now, what is Service to School?
So Service to School, at its most basic, is a free service for veterans that are transitioning out of the military to help them win admission to school, either graduate or undergraduate. But when I think about Service to School and I describe it, it's more of a platform. It's more of a network for people. So, yes, we provide the service, and that's our kind of North Star. But we also give an opportunity for service for a network of veteran ambassadors that we engage to help the transitioning veteran. So when a person comes out and wants to go to grad school or undergrad, we enlist our network of ambassadors, at their target school or sharing their background, and we put those two in touch to really kind of shepherd and guide through the process.
Okay. And how did you and your colleagues come to start Service to School?
Sure. So, it kind of started really, two ways. One was just out of a culture of service. My friend and fellow veteran Tim Shaw, we served together in the military. We were at West Point together. I was at his wedding. We actually, our first deployment, we were on the same plane together to Iraq.
Wow.
So, we've shared this long history, and, we were at the same duty stations together, and we were friends at West Point, and then, in the military, we would frequently run into each other, kind of doing service-oriented things. So, we ran into each other in Tacoma, Washington. We were both ended up volunteering at a juvenile detention center there. So we had this kind of shared ethos, which most veterans have, of service.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of went our separate ways after the military. But we had stayed in touch, and we found that as, business school graduates, as MBA 1s and 2s, we were helping a lot of veterans, with most veteran clubs do. And so one day we just decided, we're doing this informally. Why don't we try to launch a website or to make this a little bit more formalized? And that was a very nascent version of Service to School. And then as we kind of matured over the years, we have really been enabled by people like Anna Ivey, mm-hmm. another veteran, Khalil Tawil, and Chad Burgess, who helped us kind of grow this platform to reach more veterans, every year.
That's great. And about how many veterans have been helped by Service to School?
So right now in the hundreds, but I'm really excited to say that we recently were featured in Forbes, and since that article, we've really expanded our reach. So
that's great.
I'm looking forward to this year, maybe even breaking 500, moving into the thousands territory. So there is an upper limit of who we can help, just because as these kind of wars wind down, there'll be less transitioning veterans. The military will become smaller, but I'm really excited about reaching more people and helping veterans out there kind of achieve their educational goals.
Well, I would say that my immediate thought is that if you shrink because wars wind down, it's a good thing. But in terms of the revenue model for service to school, as I understand it, it's a pay it forward kind of model.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I mentioned a network, what we try to build is that when we help you, we never will ask for money for veterans to, pay for services. Just because, in my way of thinking, it's kind of like asking your mom or your brother, for money for something that, is there, right? So we're never going to do that. But obviously this takes a lot of time, and it is kind of a time-intensive effort. So what we ask is that if we help you, if you have capacity, and if you're in a law school your first year, or your MBA your first year, you might not have time. But when you do, contact us so we can link you up with a fellow veteran, and you can then kind of serve back and give your guidance and shepherd someone through the process.
Okay. And can you give us a breakdown, about how many vets are applying to business school versus law school versus other kinds of graduate schools and versus undergraduate programs?
Yeah. Yeah, so looking at the graduate side, we're still probably 70-30 business law, although some of that is probably because, Tim and I and our initial, start was in the business side, so we had a little bit more of a word-of-mouth kind of expertise on that side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then overall, our applicants, if you were to look at grad versus undergrad, we're probably about 20% undergrad, 80% grad. And we're really focusing in the future on expanding that undergrad. We want to help grad students, and that's kind of our bread and butter and our expertise. But, the people I think that need a lot of help are a lot of our soldiers that, come from kind of outsider backgrounds. So maybe they're the first person in their family to think about college, or they, grew up in an area where, you went to a state school, but, you never thought about the Ivy League. And maybe there are people that want to go to an Ivy League, or there are people that, want to kind of, get a different kind of lifestyle for themselves. And so we're really trying to focus on those folks that have that desire to do the undergraduate route, go to college. And so we're trying to expand our route, our reach into that market even more.
You're working any times with people who are, let's say, in a community college, vets who are currently attending to a community college and want to transfer to a four-year college?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And we, for the right person, that's such a great route to go.
Right.
We want to make sure that people are going to college that's going to give them a really good return on investment.
Sure.
And unfortunately, in the military, sometimes you're easy prey for colleges that might not give you, for-profit colleges, for instance, that might not give you that great return on investment. There's a lot of great for-profits out there that, give you good technical skills that you can use to get work.
Mm-hmm.
But we really try to look at what the undergraduate, soldier, sailor, airman, marine, what they want to do, what they want their lives to look like, what their kind of background and skill set is, and then help, give them some good counsel on, what might be the best choice for them.
Right. I was actually just thinking of somebody who works for me and approached me about her son, who he wasn't applying yet. He's in community college now, but he wants to go to a good four-year university. As it happens, we know a professor who was in a field related to what he's interested in, and I was able to put him in touch with that professor. And that professor is just a lovely, lovely man, and I'm sure he was very helpful to this guy. But now I'm going to tell the mother, so I'm not in touch with the son that much, also about service to school. Now,
yeah, please do. That's the whole benefit of, so many military people are kind of what I would call outsiders to the educational elite. So, when you have an outsider perspective to schools, you just don't know, what graduate degrees are going to give you the best job options, what institutions are going to give you the best kind of outlook for what you want. And so a lot of people think, I'm just going to get a four-year degree, and then my life's going to be great. And unfortunately, that's just not always the case. So we try to give that, you know, advice and that counsel to folks that are, you know, applying to schools, maybe the first of their family to apply to schools.
That sounds wonderful. Now, what are your what is a success story at Service to School that you are particularly proud of?
That's a great question. You know, and there's kind of two really that come to mind. I think when we first started, you know, Tim and I were we just didn't know if this was going to work. Is there demand? Were we going to be able to be successful in guiding people towards the right school? So I think maybe the first three people we helped, one got into Harvard Business School, and then two got into Wharton, and they were all.
That's a pretty good track record.
Right? It was amazing. We were just floored. We were so excited.
Yeah.
And the thing that made it for me personally was that they had good scores, but they were in the lower end and maybe even a little bit outside of what you would expect for HBS and Wharton.
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel like our counsel helped push them into that range. So it made me, that for me, validated this, the train methodology. We call it, you know, to win, you have to train. And that stands for the T is test prep, resume review, application, and essay review, interview prep, and networking.
Uh-huh.
We follow that kind of, each person goes through those stages. That, for me, validated that methodology and say, look, we're really value add here. So that was exciting. And I think the second thing, which is really, for me, I think, the most, you know, purposeful thing of Service to School, which is really helping that undergrad side, helping
mm-hmm.
those outsiders, the soldiers,
mm-hmm.
was the first soldier that we got into. It was the University of Iowa. And, again, it was the same thing. It was a guy who, you know, C's and D's and taught in high school, kind of turned it around in the Marine Corps, newfound discipline,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to shape up his essays, shape up his kind of his presentation of some of his materials, and he got into the University of Iowa, and for me, that's kind of what it's about.
That's great. That's great. Now, when you started at NYU Stern, you basically went straight from the military, in your case, the Army, and Service to School is for all the services, right?
That's right.
For Army, Navy, okay, Marines. When you started,
Coast Guard.
Even Coast Guard, okay. When you started at NYU Stern, what were the special challenges you faced coming from the military, or were there any?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another, you know, stellar question. And you kind of have to, you know, it's all mixed up in the challenges with just reintegrating into society, really.
Okay.
You know, like you read about, you know, some warrior societies like the Celts used to, when warriors would come back, they'd have to be sung back into their bodies. So there's always been this kind of tradition of the society doing something to kind of bring warriors back home. And so for me, business school did that function. So I think that, you know, the challenge was really, how do you become a civilian again?
Mm-hmm.
And if I can digress just with a quick story.
Sure.
You know, I remember, thank you. I remember I did a, maybe it was my third week back, you know, third week being a civilian, we were going to do a 5K race,
mm-hmm.
my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, during the race, they did a little national anthem beforehand. And in the military, national anthem, you know, you're at attention, you're saluting, there's a very, you know, respectful process. And as I stood getting ready for this race, people were talking. You know, people kept their hats on. There was all this, and I was so upset. I was just enraged, and it wasn't, you know, I was just red in the face, and I was trying to figure out, what do? I say, you know, and I just breathe, and I eventually calmed down. You know, what I realized is that they weren't being disrespectful. It was just a different culture. You know, it's mm-hmm. a different society. It's a different way of thinking, and you have to learn to adjust to that. In business school, education in general is a great way to reintegrate, you know, a great way to kind of be sung back into your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what you have to do, and what's the kind of root of that? Well, in the military, you're very proud. And in that pride, you can kind of build up this, you know, sense of ego and sense of anger and all these kind of things that come along with being in the military and, you know, being in combat. And so when you come back, you have to kind of tone that back. You have to peel back some of that pride and then just really reintegrate and become a civilian again. And I think that's the biggest challenge that, you know, not necessarily a school-focused challenge or a NYU-focused challenge, mm-hmm. but just a challenge that all veterans are going to have to figure out kind of on their own.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Have you ever read the book? This is digressing a bit myself. Have you read the book Unbroken?
Yes, with Max Cleland?
No, it's about Louis Zamperini, and it's by Laura Hellenbrand.
Oh, the one where he's in the raft.
Yes, for 40-something
years.
And obviously he was also a POW. I mean, he was tortured. He had the 40 days on the boat, and he had a horrible time reintegrating. You know, probably undiagnosed post-traumatic stress syndrome and, you know, all kinds of things. He passed away over the summer.
I do remember that. You know, and I think it's important to note, I think it's just everybody, regardless of the level, it's obviously his story, intense. The book I was thinking, Strong at the Broken Places, I think it's by Max Cleland.
Okay.
Similar kind of story, very intense experience. But even people that weren't, you know, I was an infantryman, but even if you weren't an infantry person on the front lines, there's still so much stress. And there's still so much, like, you know, issues that every veteran has to, either through family, through veteran services, maybe even through an organization like Service to School, they need to find that community and that network that's going to bring them back to society.
Right. And I think that I never served in the military. I think it's very hard for people who haven't served in the military, who haven't had those kinds of experience, understand what it is like, especially if you've been in combat.
You know, there almost has to be, and I hope Service to School does this to some extent. We try to do this, you know, one-on-one where we talk to people. Mm-hmm. There almost has to be kind of this social contract between, you know, society and the soldier, you know, and it's, hey, we respect what you did, but this is kind of what you owe us. You can't, you know, look down on us. You can't be condescending. And in turn, we owe you respect and we owe you the chance to become a civilian again.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good way to look at it. Now, when you were a student at NYU and since you become a consultant, do you think that there were distinct advantages to you in having gone to West Point, but and having been in the military for all those years?
Mm-hmm. I think I'll think about two things. You know, maybe a benefit and then a challenge.
Okay.
I think the real benefit, so consulting is just such a cerebral profession that the kind of what it values is analytical horsepower. It values being able to structure unstructured problems, being able to be comfortable in ambiguity. The military really helps you with comfort and ambiguity, you know, being able to stand in front of, you know, a senior executive with very little experience in that person's industry
right.
and be able to have a conversation with them, helps mm-hmm. you with that, and it really mm-hmm. helps you with planning. So, you know, in the military, you know, my God, you're planning sea and air movements of $200 million and 160 people, and you're 22, 23 years old. So you have this such experience with planning that no one can really rival you. So
you've had such an enormous responsibility, for heaven's sakes.
Right, exactly. the challenge is, though, is the last 5 years you've been back and forth from Iraq, leading soldiers, you know, checking up in the barracks on Sundays to see what antics your soldiers have been up to so you can kind of get them right. While you've been doing that, your peers have been, you know, building hardcore analytics, building detailed models, solving very complex mental challenges. And you have to come up to speed on that stuff very quickly because mm-hmm. you're going to be outgunned and you need those skills to be successful as a consultant. So that's something that in business school and on the job, you have to bring up those kind of technical skills very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel the challenges are similar to the vets, let's say, going to undergraduate school or going to law school or going to other graduate programs, in that on one hand, they've had this enormous responsibility. They've had incredible leadership experience, certainly if they've been in an officer corps, but they don't have the technical skills or the academic skills if you're talking about undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, from my conversations with my friends, I think that there are similar challenges. But I think the flavor is a little different. And I think the main challenge for the undergraduate folks is this reintegration. So you're, you know, maybe you're 22, 23, maybe older, and, you know, there starts to be a generational gap, you know, just between mm-hmm. a, you know, 17, 18-year-old and a 24-year-old, that could be significant.
Yeah.
You can layer on the whole veteran status, the Iraq, how do you talk about your combat experiences, and then you just get very isolated. And it's very hard to make friends, and it's hard to really join in on the kind of campus experience. I think that's the biggest challenge undergraduates face, is really figuring out how to just relate to people. You know, on the B school side, I think it's definitely the analytics are a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and on the law school side, I think that sometimes the intensity of the work, believe it or not, can be overwhelming for people. So while the military is certainly intense, for some reason, it's a different mental intensity to be in like a law school environment than it is to, you know, be on patrol even. You know, it's almost the difference between kind of type one thinking and type two thinking. You know,
mm-hmm.
in the military, you develop this instinctual level of reactive ability. That's kind of how you react, at least at the junior officer level and soldier level.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, law school and other business school and other places really value this kind of long-term strategic, analytic, thoughtful approach to thinking that you might not have developed as well.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Interesting point. Now, let's go for a moment to your NYU Stern experience. What did you like best about NYU Stern?
So I think, and I'm a huge NYU advocate, I think that I almost personality-wise felt closer to folks at NYU than I did in the Army. And so,
mm-hmm.
You know, my Army bonds are always going to be there, and they'll always be the strongest bonds I have. But the NYU personality is just, it's down to earth. Everybody there is really smart. Everyone there is a lot of fun. And I think it's mostly, you know, optimistic, extroverted, fun folks to hang around. So it's just, you know, all smiles, lots of just great personalities and interesting people. And so, you know, I just felt like it was a family day one, and I felt like I fit right in. So I think for me the best experience was being part of this kind of family, part of this, you know, real fun group of people. And, you know, the second part really is just the New York experience. So you're down in the Village, which is just an awesome place. You're
yeah.
getting to experience kind of the coolest neighborhoods in New York. Classroom-wise, they're always bringing in kind of New York institutions, you know, Alvin Ailey Dance Theater, Steinway Pianos. They're always bringing in the heart of the city into the classroom,
uh-huh.
and that's just, you can't beat that. And I don't think anybody at any other school kind of comes close to what NYU does.
Ned, when you went to NYU, when you were starting NYU in 2009, it really was the depths of the Great Recession, okay? Were you planning to go into consulting at that point, or did you initially choose NYU because you were thinking more of financial services and then changed your mind along the way? Or where were you headed at that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. It was, you know, when you got there, you felt the financial crisis had just happened,
right.
and people were still shell-shocked. You know, it was interesting because the professors would talk about it and kind of you would explain it in your classes and their analysis of the, you know, of why it happened, how it happened. So that was a really great experience to kind of really get that in-depth knowledge from the professors and from the students who kind of lived it. But for me, I actually always intended to do consulting. When I was, my second deployment was in Sadr City, and it was 15 months long. And my wife, you know, thank God, had gone to business school before me. And so she really knew, you know, what's business school about? You know, what's it good for? What can it help you accomplish? And when we were talking about me getting out of the service, she sent me some wet feet career guides and some bulk career guides. And she said, look, here's two things I think you might like. One was sales and training, and one was consulting. And so I read through sales and training, and it sounded interesting, but it felt a lot like the kind of aggressiveness of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of shying away from that more. And then when I read consulting, it just really clicked with me. And just another brief story.
Sure.
When I was in Sadr City, it was just devastated. There was a lot of fighting there.
Yeah.
And you could see that, you know, what can the military do? The military can kind of stop the immediate fighting. But once we stop the immediate fighting, you know, what made the area start to come alive again? And for me, what I saw was money coming into the area.
I was thinking commerce. Yeah.
Exactly. Commerce. That's when you start to see things come alive. And that stuck with me. And that said, you know, I want to help people. I want to, you know, how can I make commerce, how can I make this kind of liveliness happen? And when I read about consulting, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, maybe I can help businesses in my own country where I understand the language better, where I understand the cultural norms a little bit better. Maybe I can be even more effective. And I thought, you know, this consulting thing seems like it'll help me kind of help people on this broader scale. And so that was kind of the initial, you know, thought, and that's what drove me towards consulting.
What do you think is the best preparation for a career in consulting? What courses or activities, either at NYU or in the military, did you find particularly valuable? I mean, you certainly had a varied undergraduate education and major there.
Yeah, you know, consulting is one of those ones that is very hard to gain. I think consulting firms in general value the military background and what we can bring to the table because they value this unique variety of experience. They value people that have different backgrounds, you know, that have an interesting liberal arts degree, that have, you know, they were a physicist in Geneva. One of my colleagues was a physicist before he and got his master's in physics and then said, let me try something different. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say because everyone has such a different background. But I think that the best thing you can do is, you know, learn about the profession, you know, talk to people in the profession, make sure it's something you want to do, and then look at, you know, how do the firms recruit? You know, what kind of skill sets do they look for? And then work on translating your experience into that skill set. So if you're from a military background, you really want to highlight your, you know, not only your leadership abilities, but your ability to plan strategically, your ability to, you know, do complex analysis, your ability to deal with these ambiguous problems and structure them. And so I think if you kind of learn about it, talk to people, get a sense and make sure it's what you want to do, and then really steer your resume and kind of steer your experiences towards the skill set they're looking for, that'll kind of help you get that interview and get that offer.
Okay. Now, you're now an engagement manager, right, for Strategy Amp?
Yes.
Right.
I am.
When you are looking, and I assume you have some choice, influence, whatever, on the consultants that join you on an engagement, what do you look for?
So the very first thing I look for is, and really boils down to maybe three things. One is I look for someone that is going to be analytically strong. You know, can I trust this person to solve the problem? If I have a tough problem or a series of tough problems, can I give them a problem on their own in a room for 20 minutes? Can they come back to me with a solution?
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing I look for is, can I put this person in front of a very senior client and they can handle themselves? You know, they don't get flustered very easily. They don't trip over their words. They're respectful. You know, the airplane test, the classic kind of, if I was stranded in an airport with this person, would I like them?
That kind of test.
And then the last thing is energy. So I think to do the consulting job, it tends to be pretty late hours and pretty early morning. So you have to have the energy that's going to, you know, drive you through 12 to 15 week engagement or a 6 week engagement that's, you know, might have some all-nighters.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Yep. How can a college student or recent college graduate prepare for a career in strategy consulting? I mean, let's say, okay, somebody's graduated college, they're close to graduating college, and they know they're going to work for a few years, they're not going to go immediately into consulting, they're going to go do an MBA. What should they be doing before the MBA if they think they want to go into consulting after the MBA? Maybe they have a technical background. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, is they should plan lots of vacations before. Get all of your vacation, all your beach time, all your margaritas finished before you begin consulting because you will never have a chance. I think that if you have identified consulting as your goal, you know, you really want to, you know, learn as much as you can, you know, contact, network, learn the firms, because every firm is different, has their own unique culture, and you should kind of be aware of that. Just make sure it's a good fit for you. Make sure you like the people you talk to. and you have good conversations and good engagement with them. And then really, you know, when it comes down to recruiting, we all typically use kind of a case interview process. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't say that you should be good at a case interview. And how to be good at a case interview is tricky, and it's firm dependent. You should practice, but you can't practice too much, otherwise you look too rehearsed. But you should work on your problem solving, your structuring of complex problems, and really your analytical ability to kind of solve those using a data-driven, hypothesis-driven approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there are actually a few books out there. You know, like one of my favorite books for consulting is Barbara Mento's The Pyramid Principle. That's kind of a consulting classic. And, you know, no book is going to give you the answer you need to get there, but she does a great job of kind of explaining the logical top-down thinking that a consultant uses on a day-to-day basis, and it could probably help aspiring consultants figure out how to case better and get that offer.
I read a few years ago Case Interview Secrets by Victor Chang, who I also interviewed for the podcast. And I've never been a strategy consultant or a management consultant, but I thought the book was fascinating because the way he laid out just developing cases.
Yeah. You know, so if I were to ask you how many light bulbs can fit in a Boeing 767, do you feel confident now that you can answer that question?
I read the book 3 years ago. I don't think so. But I thought when I read it, I felt like I was learning a problem solving, an approach to problem solving, and there was a certain logical rigor that I thought was just fascinating. And I have had him on the show also because I thought it was so fascinating and I've recommended the book several times. But I was wondering if you had read the book because obviously you're doing the work. You know, it's something, okay, I found it interesting. But, you know, but you recommend this one, so maybe I'll Pyramid Principle. I might go look up that one.
Yeah,
too.
And there's a lot of good ones. You know, I haven't read Victor's, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of really good books out there that can help you. But, you know, that's a good test for yourself too because if you read a lot of these case books, and I would – you know, I would never just use one. I would read a few just so you can mm-hmm. understand it.
There's also the McKinsey Way, I believe. Isn't that another one?
Yeah, McKinsey Way, exactly. Mm. If you don't like doing the cases, and just to be honest, you know, casing can be tough, and people might not like it. But if you really feel averse when you're doing cases, like, I don't like this, this isn't fascinating, I hate this, that's your hint that maybe consulting isn't the right profession because literally every single day it's like a case. Every single day you're structured or solving some kind of new problem.
Right. That was actually one of the points made in Case Interview Secrets very clearly. So anyway, okay.
Excellent.
Any advice for applicants considering applying to business school either from the military or from a civilian profession?
I think that, you know, the train methodology, my service to school train methodology, I think that is actually a pretty good methodology to test yourself.
It's a great one. It's a very good one.
Do you have the right test scores? That's the first thing. Look, as much as everyone hates, or not hates, as much as the GMAT and GRE and these tests are very challenging, you got to do well on them. So do well on them. You know, get that knocked out first. And then think about your resume. And if you're doing your resume, get the school format. You know, like, you know, find somebody, an advocate that you can talk to at the school. Try to get that school's format and use that to build your resume. And, you know, there's a million ways to talk about how to make a good resume. But once you have that, the resume is really critical, I think, in terms of before you start networking or reaching out to schools. But get your resume, get your applications and interviews, you know, in order, and then the networking, making sure you're networking with these schools. And maybe even I take a step back and say, make sure business school's right for you. Make sure that it's what you want to do, you know, especially if you're, you know, transitioning out of the military, if you're transitioning from, you know, undergrad to do something. You only get a few chances, and this is an exaggeration, but, you know, you have some chances you can really readmit yourself. And I'm really excited that I was able to go to NYU, which is one of, you know, they're kind of specialists at reinvention, and I could kind of create a new life for myself that wasn't in the military. So if that's, you know, if you want that, then do it. But if you don't, think about, look, you know, do you want to do some, do you want to be a short order cook somewhere? You know, do you want to pursue a different dream, you know?
Right.
Use these opportunities to figure out what you want.
That sounds like great advice. Gus, thank you so much for sharing your story and that of service to school, and also the advice and insight you have on both the NYU Stern experience and consulting. It's been wonderful. Where can listeners learn more about service to school?
They can learn more at service2school.org. So that's service2school.org, and then instead of T-O, it's the number two. And Linda, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I hope everyone out there that's listening that you got something out of this.
I'm sure they did. And I also realized I didn't plan it this way, but this podcast is going to – we're recording it on November 4th, which happens to be Election Day, and we're going to post it on November 13th, which happens to be 2 days after Veterans Day. So it's – you know, it's kind of well-timed. Now, we'll include links in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/80 to the service to school .org website. And listener, I want to thank you too for joining just Gus Jockman and me for AST's 80th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you leave a nice shiny 5-star feedback. So if you think AST deserves those 5 stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave the review. And if you have a question for me, once again, please ask it at info.com/80, just in the comments, or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.